Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 70. And guys, we're in the preseason. Yeah, more of the preseason has occurred, and I know what you're thinking. Man, how did I not get to watch any of that preseason on preseason action? And that's a really great question. It's a little mind-boggling to us here on the podcast that, you know, hockey fans might want to watch the Sharks in the preseason and are kind of stuck listening to the not fully radio casts through the Sharks app. But hey, I'll tell you what, one day we'll get to the point where we can watch everything that we would like to watch.
Yeah, if you've ever wondered why the NHL is the fourth or fifth most popular sport in North America, it's probably because they can't even figure out how to broadcast a preseason game.
I can watch the second round of the draft, but I can't watch the preseason for my hockey team unless it's a video board feed and someone else is running it.
The Sharks are the ones who did run that, right? Reason we didn't see anything this week is because apparently Arizona and Anaheim don't know how to do that.
Yeah, technology's hard, guys. It's so hard. I'm Alex. Here with me on the podcast once again is Ben, whose voice you heard. Say hello, Ben.
Yager.
And now I'm depressed.
No.
Because Yager was like, hey, I'm not going to go to a tryout. I've been in this league for 25 years. And saying no over and over again, that would be Colin. What's up, Colin? How's it going over there this morning in Sweden?
We get even less NHL hockey than you.
Wow, that's even worse.
I guess that does, you know, help me a little bit. When the season starts, we'll be able to watch hockey.
How does it feel knowing that it snows where you are, but you can't watch it? And it doesn't snow where we are, but we can watch it.
I can watch the snow whenever I feel like going outside. Well, your sense structure lacks something there.
Not the snow. The hockeys.
Well, you know, I can watch Swedish league hockey, which, you know, if you don't mind lack of checking, too much ice, and
way too many advertisements.
and advertisements literally slathered all over every surface.
Like a NASCAR. I was actually listening to on the way home today, I for some strange reason had Bloomberg Radio on, and it was every Friday they have a sports business talk show, which is actually kind of interesting. Sometimes I tune in intentionally, most of the time I don't. And they were talking about the NBA mostly, but they referenced hockey a little bit, and they were talking about the slow creep with the new sweater designs toward, you know, what seems like a lot of space for a little chess advertisement, and how slow hockey in the U.S. and basketball have been to embrace it, and how much money they're leaving on the table. Quite frankly, I like them without, but to each their own. Anyway, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about what is going on right now in the preseason. So for those of you who haven't been paying attention, let us break some potentially bad news. A couple players banged up right now out of the blue. Bodker this week. Couture, both left practice with minor injuries. Pavs had a maintenance day. And Ben, what's your feeling on maintenance days?
Well, I mean, I guess I don't have on all maintenance days, right? I have no issue with that. I mean, you know, one of the things DeBoer did really well a couple of years ago was give some guys some days off, and that's what he's claiming is going on here with Pavelski. Mm. But then Pavelski also didn't play in a preseason game around this maintenance day, and that's where my yes meter starts to emit a little bit. That's not to say that we won't maybe see Pavs in the next couple of days. I hope we do. If we don't, that's when I start to go all conspiracy theory on this, I guess.
And so, and we have a concussion as well, correct?
Yeah. I still don't know how you're really supposed to pronounce his last name, because the Barracuda announcer says Charzay, but Chartier, I guess, has had a concussion, which is a huge bummer.
Yeah.
Well, it's also like Bodker's injury is a puck to the mouth, and Logan just like stepped on a bad piece of ice and
Kocher
tweaked his knee.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, Kocher was back at practice and he played yesterday, so I guess that's a good sign for that.
Who knows with a hockey player? I mean, these guys have literally played with broken ankles, wrists, and ribs, and collapsed lungs. So
separated shoulders. Yeah.
And then, of course, the biggest question of all, right, is Jumbo hasn't gotten into a preseason game. And you know, we've gotten videos of him kind of going up and down the ice, but we got those last year in the playoffs, too, and he had no ligaments in that knee. So, you know.
In that $8 million knee?
By the way, Couture did not play yesterday, by the way.
Really? I thought I saw him in the score sheet.
I'm not seeing him here, and I don't really recall. But, hey, let's just we'll pretend whatever makes this sound smarter, Ben. That makes good. Well, here's the thing. You obviously don't want to hear about injuries during the preseason, even minor ones, especially after the season the Sharks had last year, which was kind of full of those things. But here's the good news. It's preseason, so none of that stuff counts, right, Ben? Injuries don't happen in preseason.
Yeah, this is like the one thing that counts in preseason.
Well, you know, we talked about this over the last couple of weeks. Like, what are you actually looking for in preseason?
Right.
It's not wins and losses. It's not even necessarily a metric ton of goals. It's who is kind of stepping up and playing hard and maybe even getting a few lucky bounces, mostly because that tends to be what the coaching staff keys on is when those lucky bounces become goals and that's what can elevate one guy over another guy. I don't know that it matters so much for a guy like Couture or what have you, but Bodker sort of having a nutso preseason.
He's doing what we need him to do in the preseason. Like, in the preseason.
I know that's the thing. Like, I would love to see Bodker not suck. I think we all would like to see Bodker not suck. I'm not sure that three goals in the preseason is any kind of indicator.
It's not.
One way or the other.
It's not, yeah. But you know what? If someone's starting to find, you know, if he's starting to find a little bit more of a pulse or a rhythm, then, hey, I'm not going to crap all over that, right?
No, not at all. Coacher didn't play yesterday. It's that he was back at practice. That's what it was.
I told you. I knew I could read.
Well, we'd know if we could see video of the damn game, wouldn't we?
Well, while we're talking about where we project Bodker to end up this season, there was some other, I guess, sort of news. I don't really even know if you would call it news, but regarding projections for the season. You want to cover that, Ben?
Yeah, sure. We have this, for the folks who are listening, we have sort of a group chat that keeps us connected to the news of the week before the podcast, after the podcast, what have you. And mostly Alex just rants about
everything.
Analytics, mostly.
Jager.
Love of Marlowe, that sort of thing.
And by the way, you thought this was all off the cuff? No, we actually try, which is scary, I know.
Well, just because you brought up Marlowe, just so everyone who is maybe new to us is aware, Alex and I have a three-year now running argument about Marlowe.
Yeah, the argument, and I'm not going to bore you the details of the argument, nor am I going to call Colin wrong, because Colin is partially right. But I will say this, the argument, for those of you who have been Sharks fans for forever and are tired of the what is Marlowe's legacy / skill level ranking, whatever you want to put it, legacy, it's pretty much the same argument you keep hearing, where it's a question of perception versus maybe reality. But sorry, Ben, projections.
So anyway, everybody's asking the question, you know, as we head into the regular season starting this week with the Sharks' first game on Wednesday, is, you know, where are the Sharks going to end up? You know, we've even touched on it a little bit over the last couple of weeks, where we think they're going to land, depending on health, depending on who makes the team, whatever, right? I think collectively in this group, we've been a little bit pessimistic about where the Sharks are going to land, right? We're thinking bottom of the playoff grouping, right? Eighth or seventh.
Which is so funny because in a lot of other leagues, that wouldn't be a negative projection.
No. It's only pessimistic in the sense that I think collectively we agree the Sharks don't have a chance to actually challenge for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Right. I wouldn't expect it. I should say, for them to challenge for the Stanley Cup, you're going to have to get breakout performances from at least three guys who haven't shown yet that they can really break out. So, you know, those guys being Meyer, LeBanc, Hurdle, you know, really breaking out.
You have to get bounced back from Donskoy and Milkman just needs to get lucky, I think.
Yeah, and I'd argue Bodker having a really solid year, maybe even a 20 goal year. If the stars align, because the defense is going to be good, right? The real question is, are the forwards going to be able to score, and is the power play going to work? And for that to happen, those guys have to step up, I think. And I think you guys generally agree with that, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So So obviously we're not the only ones who are trying to figure out who's going to end up at the top of the heap. And some guys in the analytics community, they have great models that they refine year over year. Guys like Micah Blake McCurdy, guys like Dom, whose last name I'm not going to try to pronounce. Alex shared in our chat this week Micah's projection, which has the Sharks not just at the top of the heap in the Pacific, but well above the top of the heap by average.
Yeah, right? Like running away with it.
With the, you know, in the regular season. So with the first seed in theory, at least in that, not in the conference, but in the division anyway.
And there are some caveats with that as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a range, right? So it's projecting the top, the best case scenario, the average scenario, and the bottom scenario. But I guess, and you know, if things go wrong, obviously the projection supports the Sharks ending up, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, or even below, right?
Right.
But through, he runs, I think, thousands of simulations to kind of come to this. And his perspective is that the Sharks have no real key weakness. And the Sharks have a lot of good players. And that supports a strong year, right?
Not taking into consideration play degrading due to age or anything, but which, to be fair, you can't really accurately predict that.
Right.
But important to note, because it's sort of like a best case scenario in a lot of ways.
I'm glad you brought that up, because other sports do have sort of a projection model for players that does account for sort of their rise and fall. And there isn't such a thing for hockey yet. There'd been a couple attempts to build something like that. There's a general idea that players peak physically around 26, 27, though they can still, given deployment, improve their point totals at age 28, 29, 30. And then you have guys like Pavs who just shits on models. So all that is taken into this account. You're right. What if Ward falls off a cliff? What if what's the name I'm looking for?
Martin.
You know, Jumbo's, what if Jumbo's terrible, right? What if he just doesn't recover from his knee injury?
But I mean, when you say other sports, is soccer included in there? Because it feels like, you know, football and baseball, you have players. It's like, you know, that player's a hammer, that player's a screwdriver. Whereas in hockey, a player has to have a pretty wide skill set.
I mean, hockey's different. I think that might be, as you say, Colin, I think that might be part of the reason why it's hard. And baseball is easier, right? Because you've got like two skill sets. You're either a pitcher or you're a hitter, right? So it's easier for them to build those models. Football, basketball, hockey, soccer, they're all more chaotic.
You could be a fielder or a runner.
Sure.
Or a manager.
But that's not
you're doing like one thing.
I'm just kidding.
More chaotic sports where you're more dependent on your partners on the field, they just haven't cracked that nut. And that's fine. Whatever. I mean, that's a sidelight to this. I guess the key point is that that's a much more optimistic perspective than I think we've seen among Sharks fans.
No, I mean, isn't this the thing that sort of led us to have the choking label, because everyone always looks at our roster and goes, wow, such a solid roster. They're going to do great. And then we do basically what we should have done in terms of our ability, and people call us chokers because, oh, hey, we didn't win at all with a team that never should have won at all.
Alex, feel free to jump in there, but I have strong feelings about this after.
Why don't you put yours out and then I'll just crap all over them. Go ahead.
So I think it's almost as though I know you guys have really strong feelings about it.
Colin, we've all lived through exactly what you're talking about, right? And so I'm not going to dispute that there has been a lot of, in the last 6 or 7 years, media figures saying it's the Sharks' year. It's the Sharks' year.
Lately, for sure, yes.
And hell, I mean, even the Sharks have finished with the President Trophy, right, in the regular season, and then crapped out in the playoffs, and they did choke there.
Yes.
You know, whatever. Here, instead of media figures, though, what we have is guys who have built actual, like, models to try to project performance, which is not easy, and they're not never going to be perfectly accurate either, right? So I think it's a little bit of a different situation than the – like Pierre LeBruns of the world saying it's the Sharks' year, right?
Hey, like, he says that every year. You be nice to him.
I like Pierre LeBrun a lot. He's not alone. Greg Wyshynski also.
Yeah, I thought we picked on Kurtz here.
No.
Oh, there's a piece of news. We lost our insider, everybody.
Did we really lose him? Anyway.
Yeah.
So I think the difference here is that this isn't, I actually think if you polled media figures, they wouldn't expect the Sharks to finish first this year. I think they might be more in line with kind of where we feel like the Sharks are going to show up.
I'm pretty sure they assume it's going to be the Predators. Yeah. I mean, I haven't read a lot about what the projections are yet because it's too early for me to be doing that, but.
To be fair, I am looking forward to watching some Predators hockey, as filthy as that makes me feel.
No, Predators are fine to watch. They're fun.
Yeah. So I guess, I don't know what to think about this team, right? Partly because of that, that projection looks really good. And I should say, the other thing that's built into that that model of the Sharks kind of running away with it, though I'm surprised to not see Anaheim a little bit higher in this model too because of the same reasons, is that the Sharks get to feast on shitty teams.
But they get the thing for me, though, is, and like my small quiet hope is, we have a lot of chaos inducing players who can create point opportunities for other people. Hansen, Meyer, Carlson, to like a really, really, really lesser extent, Tierney.
Right.
And then, of course, Thornton, if Thornton can, you know, stand up.
I'm actually really glad you brought up Hansen, too, because he's a guy I always forget about because he's been with the team so little, and he only really gelled with that top line for like a couple weeks before he started getting line grinded around.
I think he filled bunches of spots really well. He filled some of them better, sure.
I'm not meaning to poo on him. I just don't think he never got into a scoring groove, partly because he didn't spend a lot of time with the top line. I mean, the Sharks had so many problems at the end of the year last year. That's part of what makes it really hard to guesstimate where they're going to be this year. Part of that was injuries. Part of that was age. Part of that was maybe the long off season, as you know, Alex, you like to harp on all year last year.
Not as an excuse. This is like
No. Yeah, totally. So I think you're right. And look, I'm optimistic about Timo Meier. I think he's going to be better than most people in the community think he's going to be this year. I really have liked what I've seen from him in the limited time I've gotten to see him live this year and you know, on one stream or what have you. I really do think he's going to score 20 if he's given the opportunities.
Okay, so you kind of answered the question I wanted to ask, and it's good because this is a question that I don't think I've gotten specifics out of you when we're chatting. Do you think that his breakout is purely going to be point production, or do you think he's going to be one of those, I forget the term for them, but the player who just impacts everything around them without actually showing up on the scoreboard?
Would that be an impact player?
Jackass.
Are you asking, Colin, if he's going to have some decent assist totals?
Oh God.
Or are you just asking if?
Because I'm curious what you think of break. Yeah, it's what do you think that breakout is going to actually manifest as? Because the big thing for me watching him play is he is hard to play against. He is in people's faces. He's pressuring pucks. He is hitting bodies, and he's doing it in sensible, non-self-destructive ways.
Yeah,
and I mean he's quick. He's heavy on his stick. It's just. He seems like he's going to be a nightmare to play against once he gets his full strength and, you know, he calms down a little bit.
Yep. He's fast Ryan Clough.
Yeah.
Imagine what Ryan Clough could have done with speed.
Well, he could have, you know, played on the ice.
He didn't need speed. He
would not have to play that puck from the bench.
Right, exactly.
All right. Now we've gotten that out of the way.
You got to do that at least once a podcast, I feel like.
Yeah. And you know, I mean... As I was saying, the main reason the Sharks are going to have kind of an easier path to the playoffs is because Vegas is bad and Vancouver is really bad. One of those is supposed to be really bad, and the other one is just a terrible organization. And then, you know, the Pacific is just going to continue to be not so good. The Kings are going to continue to decline. I still don't know how Anaheim played as well as they did last year. I could conceivably see two guys get to 40 points this year that have never done it before. Meyer being one, and if LeBanc gets consistent play the way he's looked in the preseason, I think he could too. Wow. They have to. If they don't, then those high-end projections don't work, right?
Right.
LeBanc at 40 points, that's I feel like we need to
set a reminder
on that one.
Definitely. I don't know that it's likely. I'm just saying I could see it happen. He's got the talent. He's got the work ethic. He came to this training camp pretty, you know, with a lot more muscle. I think it's clear that they had a talk with him, right? Because one of the reasons he ended up, you know, bouncing up and down between the two teams last year is I think the coaching staff lost faith in him and wanted him to learn from that experience of getting, you know, dropped down to the AHL and back and forth. And hey, if he did learn from that, and if it has inspired him to not kind of tail off when things go not so great. I mean, we don't need two coachers on this team, right? Guys who get super bummed when the puck doesn't go in.
See, here's the thing though. It's LeBanc is another like really good heavy stick player who can, you know, protect the puck and also break the puck off of other players just by getting in there and being a heavy stick, especially for a smaller guy. Are we going to become that stranglehold team where, you know, you can never get a pass off, you can never get a clean shot off, and we always just win like 1-0?
Isn't that how we already play, considering everyone likes to lay down in front of the puck when someone tries to shoot?
Well, that's the thing, though, is Ben mentions we don't need another Couture, and like that's a part of Logan's game that he's only now getting credit for is his amazing defensive play.
I'm actually a little upset that you know, he hasn't gotten a starting goaltender for the preseason so far. I'd like to see where he would end up as the backup. Sorry, Dell. I like you, but Couture's going to be your job.
I think Couture would try to be a goalie with no face mask, and nobody needs that.
Well, nobody at this needs
point, Couture taking more pucks to the face.
Yeah, at this point, he's already had his teeth knocked out. So really, what's the risk?
You know, you were talking about Colin, kind of what makes the Sharks go right now, that idea that they are, they suppress shots, particularly they suppress dangerous shots, right? That is kind of what, when they did win last year, that was their path to victory. And I do think that's kind of what we're going to see this year from Sharks hockey as well. The key challenge here is, you know, in playing that game last year where they did suppress shots pretty well and Jones was serviceable. They just didn't score enough, right? And particularly the power play was straight garbage.
Oh, yeah.
So for this team to actually meet those top end things and for those guys to hit those point totals I think they could get to, it does require them to affix the power play. And I don't know if that has happened. I don't think preseason tells us either. So that'll be the thing I'll be watching over the first month of the season is – does the power play look as pathetic, as discombobulated, as routine, as predictable as it was last year?
And the last word there, that was our kiss of death, because our power play looked exactly like our normal offensive cycle, which was hold the puck, where's Burns? Okay, there's Burns. Give him the puck, let him shoot. And, I mean, everybody knew it was going to happen. The blind janitor in the basement knew it was going to happen.
Listen, Colin, one. Don't hate on the most telegraphed play in hockey. Two, don't tell everyone what we're going to do in the preseason because then we'll never be able to do it in the season.
Well, one, the most telegraphed play in hockey was Paul Coffey gets the puck in the defensive end. Paul Coffey scores. So,
or you could also argue it was Gretzky goes behind the net. He holds it
into his office.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you. Sorry, Alice. I know you're new to the sport, but we call that space the office.
Excuse me. Recall when the NHL decided to make that a little larger so they could do that.
Look, I guess we have some new listeners who haven't listened to us before. It's fair to note, by the way, folks, that Colin and Alex go all the way back to the very beginning of the Sharks as fans, relative noob.
And earlier.
And even I know that Gretzky's place was called the office. So.
Yes. Yeah. Alex, weren't we both? No, you like some crappy team before the Sharks came around. I was the Wings fan.
I think both of us chose unforgivable teams at that point in time, given who we root for now. But hey,
it's all right.
I'll tell you what, guys. Let's move into the two games that were actually played this week.
Those games I didn't get to see or hear about because, you know. Scandinavia.
Well, we didn't get to see them either, man.
Well, I listened to one and a half of them. So here's the deal. We pulled the Vegas Golden Knights and got overly excited after we played the Coyotes because we were still undefeated at that point. The Sharks scored 5. The Coyotes scored 4. Notable things here. Sharks dramatically outshot the Coyotes in this game. Sharks goals came from Bodker. Bodker. Yeah. And by the way, by the way, in that order, Bodker and then Bodker. Barclay Goodrow, LeBanc, and Couture. And then that game went to a shootout, and Tim Heed was the hero. San Jose Sharks dominated possession through the second and the third period. But you know what? It's a preseason game, and it doesn't really matter. This was obviously not an actual Shark roster.
Wait. Was Smith in net?
I don't recall if Smith was in net, actually.
No.
Damn
it. No. Okay. Not.
But Groznik did get a start, and we had talked about that last week, about wondering when and if he was going to get a look, considering his play last season. Well, he got a look. And that's about it. It's going to end up being Jones and Dell.
Groznik actually was back up the next game too. So right. Dell's been getting a little more rest for some reason.
Well, if Goodrow got a look too, then I think Groznik and Goodrow can, you know, talk to each other on the bus back to the Barracuda.
It's more like an elevator ride.
Is it Dell? Well, let me ask you this, Ben. Is it that Dell is getting rest, or is it that Dell is getting training for his job on sitting on the bench waiting for Martin Jones to eventually keel over and die so that he can get a game in this season?
We talked about this last podcast. I mean, yeah, Dell isn't bad. Like, Dell is solid. So let's.
Dell's really good.
Yeah. You know, let's throw him against, you know, Winnipeg, Arizona, maybe Calgary. They're actually looking kind of scary.
Which, by the way, is where Mike Smith is.
Oh, well, then definitely against Calgary.
Welcome to the off season, God.
Hey, man.
Let's hop over because, look, as Ben noted, we don't got a lot of stuff on these games here. The Sharks yesterday, that's Thursday, play the Ducks, and guess what? No longer undefeated. The Sharks lose this one. Oh. They give up 3 goals in the third period. Now, one thing that I will note about this game is that, well, two things I'll note. First of all, Sharks did pretty well on possession, and this game wasn't all that far apart. In fact, it was a pretty close game. And here's the good news about that. That Ducks roster kind of looks pretty close to a final roster, and the Sharks roster closer, but we were missing quite a few key forwards from this game. Couture, Pavs, Thornton, you know, the types of guys that would typically make a difference. So if you want to say that the Sharks, minus some of their best guys, managed to play a close game against the Ducks starters, well, that's a pretty good sign, I would say, to take away from the game. Obviously, the Sharks didn't score any goals, so I'm not going to tell you who scored for them. And Martin Jones was in it. And you know, look, despite the score, Martin Jones had a fine game.
Yeah, he was fine. The defense is more or less an AHL defense, not counting Braun, in terms of experience. So it is what it is, and right. You know, preseason, and as you say, you're not playing a full roster, and they've got Corey Perry in the lineup. So
this
not game, that he did anything. I'm just saying Corey Perry is syphilis on skates.
This game also on our side was a really good look at the, you know, the three guys basically vying for a defensive spot on the team, because you had DeMello.
Yeah,
Heed, and
Ryan.
So, you know, we're getting closer to the point where we're going to figure out exactly where our lines are, at least to start the season. And I know that because we only have one more preseason game.
Two more Saturday.
Oh, man, we play the Coyotes again. I don't count them as a hockey team, man. You know that. And by the way, in true Sharks scheduling nature, normally for the regular season, we play way too many back-to-back games. Well, guess what? We have a back-to-back preseason game, because why the hell not? Not that Vegas is far away, but tomorrow's game against Arizona is at home, and Vegas is in Vegas on Sunday for, like, no apparent reason. See,
and here I was about to just crack a joke, a snarky joke about, oh, and of course there's a road trip in the middle, right?
Yeah. There you go. We can clear preseason with the road trip. Guys, there are only a handful of roster spots. We talked about this last week. Who do you think is going to get them at the beginning of the season? Let me put it differently. At this point in your mind, of the few guys that have, you know, we've been really watching along the third and fourth line and the D spots, who do you think's a lock?
I definitely think LeBanc and Timo are absolutely locks. I don't even think there's a debate on the forward side.
Nope, that was the correct answer.
And defensive side, it just doesn't make sense to skate anyone other than DeMelo because, let's face it, you know, whoever's skating with Dylan is probably going to see less than 17 minutes a game. And I would rather we let Heat and we let the other up-and-comers get as much ice time as they can, granted, in the AHL, but still get as much ice time as they can while we're sort of waiting for Martin to just disappear into a cloud of dust.
Yeah. We've been talking about over the last couple of weeks, what we're really probably looking at here is two forward spots and a defense spot. And I agree with Colin largely on how that's going to fall out. I think Meyer was a lock from the beginning of camp, whether he had earned it or not. I believe he has, but I think he was a lock. I think LeBanc has seized the other one. I still worry that DeBoer is going to try to keep some asshole like Bollig or Mashinter up and put them in the lineup when they shouldn't. So until those guys go down to the AHL, I will continue to fear that we're going to see some dumbass face puncher in the lineup. So if those guys go down, I could imagine there being a seat on the bench for a guy like Sorensen as well. Not that he's really lit the world on fire in camp or anything, but I just could see it. And then on the defensive side, you know, I think in a perfect world, we would see actually Martin be that seventh guy. And I think we'd all happily see like Burns, Ryan, Braun, Vlasic, Dylan, Heed be the guys.
Who skates with Burns?
I'd be fine with Ryan skating with Burns. He's done that a little bit in this preseason, and he's a defensively responsible guy who also is a little bit dynamic offensively compared to Martin.
Is he a lefty?
I thought Burns is a lefty. No, I guess Burns is a righty. Let's see. Is he a lefty? Yes, he is. So it fits.
Oh, I mean, there you go.
Yes. So, that's what ideally, what I should say is I'd like to see Dylan traded. And I'd like to see it be Ryan and Heat up and Martin on the bench and Braun, Vlasic, Burns, and I'm missing, forgetting somebody here in this. Aren't I? Hold on. Vlasic, Braun, Burns. DeMelo be up there or drop around, you know, up or down with in that spot with Burns. But we're not going to see that, right? So what we will see is we're going to see Burns and Martin, Vlasic and Braun, Dylan, and probably DeMelo with Ryan on the bench. That's my guess.
You don't think Heat on the bench?
I don't think so.
Worth asking that question.
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. You know, I think the team has kind of seen a little bit more that they like defensively from Ryan. Second, Heat's got waiver eligibility that we didn't know about sort of only kind of knew about. So he can go back down and he's, you know, he can power that CUDA team.
Yep.
Right? He almost has more value being the Burns on the CUDA, relatively speaking.
So you hit just on what I was going to say, which is DeBoer seems to have a thing where he can only really handle having one of a specific tool type on his roster at a time. You know, he can't have two proper shooting defensemen or else he just gets confused. And so he needs to keep the roster simple. So, you know, there's my face puncher. There's the defensive guy who can shoot. You know, there's the winger who's going to take it to the net and get hurt. You know, I'm good.
Well, in that sense, yeah, I mean, he's kind of redundant in that world too, right? Because he's got a Burns. He's got the guy with a great shot and the wheels. And so
he's all the way over here for nothing.
He is redundant, right?
Yeah. Whereas, or we could have, you know, a shooting defender on both power play units. What a dream that would be.
I don't disagree. Like I said, in my perfect world, again, it's the six best defensemen you've got on the ice. And I really do think, in from both offensive and defensive perspective, not just like who is the steady stay-at-home guy, that is some combination of Braun, Vlasic, Burns, Heed, Ryan, and I'm doing it again. I'm forgetting somebody.
DeMello.
Thank you. God, I feel so bad for DeMello because we've been such fans of his over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
He never gets his chance. He never gets it.
You seem to be the only one to consistently forget him, Ben. Just to
point that out. I also like how you drop your voice when you talk about stay-at-home defensemen.
Sorry, I meant
one pilots. One of us enjoys stay-at-home defensemen. And
I like stay-at-home defensemen as well.
Well, it seems you're out in the cold, Ben. So, Alex, why don't you go ahead and agree with everything Ben just said?
Well, I mean, the whole reason I asked that question was so I wouldn't have to talk. No, I mean, I agree with you guys. I think it's fairly obvious at this point. Maybe the defensive side is a little bit more of a mystery. I think the forward side, you guys are absolutely correct. I think Meyer was already written in, whether or not he had earned it. And I also agree with Ben that, you know, at this point he looks good, and they need him to be it to the point where it was never not going to be him, barring another case of mono. LeBanc last season was a player who I thought was a lot of fun and really exciting to watch. He just didn't, you know, put it in with the consistency that I would have liked. At the same time, none of the young guys that I thought were fun that came up were doing it either. So it was kind of like everyone was even Stevens in that regard, at least in my mind. So, you know, this preseason, I think he's looked good. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't make at least the initial starting roster. And, you know, as the season goes on, you know, we might see Regan and a bunch of other guys as well.
Well, I mean, we saw Sorensen kind of get that spot away from LeBanc at the end of last year and into the playoffs, right?
Right.
And so I think that this is something that one of the guys who's listening in to us mentioned in chat was that there seemed to be probably a thought in the organization that Sorensen was the front runner for that second spot after Meyer. And I think it is fair to say that whether it's been luck or hard work or preparation over the summer, that LeBanc has just stolen that, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Sorensen at the end of the season just seemed to be DeBoer's trustworthy fourth line winger. And I absolutely, if that was the thinking, I absolutely agree with it, because the guy just seems to have a great hockey IQ. And he's solid. He doesn't really seem to have any he doesn't seem to have any flaws, but he doesn't really stand out in any way either.
Yeah, well, he's also faster than most of the guys on the team, too, and that has its value.
Yeah.
You know, excepting probably, you know, Bodker and maybe LeBanc when he really gets on his horse, so.
Yeah, well, hey, guys, that's a lot that we covered. I mean, considering nothing really heavy happened this week, other than injuries.
Well, there was one more thing.
Here we go. Now, listeners, if numbers talk and analytics hasn't already turned you off, we're going to take a 5-minute, once in a lifetime break to bring in an element that is only really relevant right now in the world of Sharks, because probably the Mercury News and our good friend Joel Ward. Ben, you're the one that's got the most thoughts on this. I'm going to give it over to you so people can hit you for a while.
Well, real quick caveat. I pointed out to my wife this morning that we're going to be breaking a soft rule we have. So this is an exception.
What is the soft rule?
No talking politics.
Oh, yep. I didn't even realize we had that. We just never do it.
We never have done it. And we try not to. I mean, this is a hockey podcast, right?
Well, exactly. That's the thing. Like when you tune into hockey, at least for me, that's the last thing that I usually want on my mind. But again, this was brought up on the outside, and I'm not going to say that we necessarily feel compelled to do it just because everyone else is doing it. More so because Ben has a very interesting point. Go, Ben.
Well, it's also because it does touch directly on the Sharks, right? So you know, all right, if you don't want to hear more about Kaepernick and kneeling and protesting, then now is the time to leave the room or skip 5 minutes forward in the podcast.
But note that you probably won't hear it next podcast. So if you do want to hear it, now's your chance.
Yeah, I'm not. Well, we probably won't revisit this, but I teach civics and I teach American government. I teach U.S. history, and so this stuff is important to me. And you know, last week we gained a listener and then lost him because I support the players' right to protest during the national anthem. It's important to note they are not protesting the national anthem. They are not protesting the flag. They are bringing awareness to inequality in America, and they have a right to do so. And our president decided to say that people who do that should be fired, which is actually counter to our Constitution and the national anthem and the beliefs that are behind the flag and whatever. But this came home to roost for the Sharks because, hey, Joel Ward is an African-American player. Now he's being asked questions like, are you going to kneel during the national anthem? Are you going to show solidarity with the players in the NFL who have chosen to bring awareness to police brutality and inequality in America? And it's a fair question to ask Joel Ward because he has an experience in the NHL that 95% of the players in the NHL don't have, right? Because he's a person of color.
Can I point at something that by the way that I found somewhat interesting about this scenario with Joel Ward, and then this is sort of, I guess, how pandering the media can be sometimes towards hot topics. He's not American.
Sure.
just like honestly, like kind of worth pointing out that like
yeah,
you know.
This isn't his speech.
It shouldn't fall on him to represent all you know. It's just kind of not that inequality doesn't stretch bounds. I just thought that was really interesting. There was like a guy who the anthem is not really, you know, it's an American. I don't know. Not to me. I think when I saw that, I was like, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, he's
not. But we're also okay. So I do not want to rabbit hole dive on this topic. I agree with everything Ben has to say. But we're also, the only American sport where we play another country's national anthem before some games?
Does the NBA do it when they go and play in Canada? Because I just honestly don't know. I mean, look, the whole issue here is because initially, and I don't know how long this has been done in hockey, but, you know, this whole idea of, like, coming out for the national anthem in the NFL is relatively modern, right? They used to stay in the locker room. And so
it's from the 70s, right?
I feel like it's even more recent than that. I thought it was like 1989 was what I was seeing, but I haven't looked into it too deeply. And, you know, why we have this tradition in sports to make everybody get up and you know, culturally force them to do the national anthem before sporting events, I have questions about as a civics and American government teacher that I'm going to leave aside for the moment. But your point is valid. Why should Joel Ward have to, you know, as a Canadian, even have to deal with this, but you know, it is his decision, and his decision was that he was going to not kneel for the anthem, and he had a very well, I mean, you know, for those of you who want to read his statement, it's been posted on Twitter, it's been posted all over, it's a really moving, touching statement,
which quite frankly in general is cool anyway, because it would have been his choice.
Yeah, look, it's everybody's choice. I'll tell you what bothers me the most, actually, is that fewer white NFL players, fewer white NHL players have any kind of a perspective on this. They're all brothers in arms. They're all Americans in a lot of cases, or Canadians in others. This issue of equality should be a bigger deal. This issue of police brutality should be a bigger deal. It should be something that more people are trying to bring awareness to, not just, you know, isolated players in the NFL and whatever. I just wanted to kind of talk about it because, just as I have a right on our Twitter feed to retweet and say what I feel is important.
Which, by the way, he totally asks Colin and I before he does that.
you know, these guys have a right to, these guys have a right to decide what they want to protest or not, right? And it's their call. That's all I really wanted to say.
Well, that's the whole point, right?
Completely
agree. That's the whole point of the point of how the country works.
Oh, I guess I had one last thing to say, right? Sorry. The counter to this is that by protesting, the cultural counter to this that is being used as a cudgel against these players is the idea that the national anthem and the flag mean only one thing, which is that people died for that flag. And that really bothers me because that's it's just
myopic. Sorry for the large word, everybody, but
no, it's well, no, I mean, it's literally, it's weaponized stupidity.
Yeah.
Yes. You know what actually those soldiers died for? Those soldiers died to protect all of our values. Those soldiers died to protect freedom of speech, freedom of protest, freedom of religion, the right to bear arms, all of that stuff. Not one single thing.
Well, right? Oh, geez, you're sucking me in. Let's also remember the people who didn't wear a uniform when they are dying for those values.
Yeah, that's fair.
And not to belittle any of this, but I'd like to remember when I played NHL 3-on-3s yesterday, and I scored a hat trick with Sharky. It was nice.
You can do that. I might have to play 3-on-3s now.
Jensen, yes, you actually you can. It's actually one of the
about
the game. So, you know, the game didn't change that much, but
a great. Okay, thanks.
You can see him dance. He takes a dive, which I'm a little offended about because.
Thank you for the lighter side segue. I will plug the new NHL because I really, really, really like it.
I don't. I don't. But that's a conversation for another slow week, guys. We already mentioned there's two more preseason games left in the season. The season actually starts next week on October 4th at home against the Philadelphia Flyers. Everyone, ooh, you should tune into that. The game's at 7:30 p.m. If you can get a ticket.
Are the Flyers going to skate Patrick?
Say it again?
Are they going to skate Patrick? Because that was the whole thing, wasn't it? That they were trying to make space on their roster to get their rookie center in?
The Flyers, I mean.
We haven't had a rookie center in a while.
I was so confused. I thought you were talking about Patrick Marleau, and I was like, "Man, this politics conversation really screwed up your knowledge of rosters." I don't know. To be perfectly honest with you, I haven't followed the Flyers at all this offseason. That's one of the few teams that I really tend not to pay much attention to. I think because of the cluster that their organization has sort of been on and off over the last couple of decades. But hey, listen, if you've never been to a Sharks home opener, it is one of the more fun games, even if you don't care about who they're playing. Like, I don't really care about them playing the Flyers. If you haven't already decided that you don't want to follow us anymore because of multiple topics, the fact that, we think LeBanc is a lock. I totally understand. I feel like maybe that should be more of a question. No, I'm just kidding. I don't at all. You can follow Ben on our Twitter feed at Circling the Cup. You can follow me and my stupid picture posting, more Sharks lifestyle posts on our Facebook page at facebook.com/circlingthepuck. Make sure you put a slash in there somewhere. I forget where. You can follow us on the web at www.circlingthecup. This is getting hard. Social media makes it so hard, Ben. You can subscribe to the podcast on
iTunes.
On your Apple phone, iTunes, through the podcast app or iTunes. Just look us up under Circling the Cup. Or if you're on Android, you can follow us too.
It's there.
Or you can go to circlingthecup.com. Sorry, for some reason we just don't seem to have an Android phone. Actually, I have an Android work phone. I should subscribe to the podcast on that to make us feel like we have one more listener than we actually do. Gents, that concludes the podcast. I think we all know what time it is. It's time to say bye-bye.
No. I'm really happy I didn't need to think of like three random people to give credit to this.
Oh my gosh. You know what?
No,
I'm gonna drag you back into this. I'm sorry. We did the plugs early because we really wanted to plug the things that you usually hear at the end in advance. Three stars of the week. Thank you, Colin. Since you reminded us, why don't you go first?
This is where
one of these. I'm gonna say this right now. I feel like you can have an opinion, obviously, but one of these should be at least a little bit obvious.
Third star goes to Joel Ward.
Oh.
Just, right. You know, for reasons. Second star goes to Patrick Marleau because he's making the Toronto Maple Leafs fan feel happy that he's there before he crushes all their hopes and dreams. And first star goes to Ben for being such a wonderful Twitter spokesperson.
Oh, that's nice. I'm gonna go, Ben, and you can go.
All right, go for it.
My third star goes to LeBanc, not necessarily for the week, but you know what? Hey, looking good, buddy. You earned it. My second star of the week is going to go to, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna give it to Joel Ward too, mostly because I don't really think Joel Ward asked for any of that. And he had to put up with quite a bit this week, and I think he handled it very, very well. And my first star is going to go to Bodker, because Bodker scored 2 goals in a game. And you know what? We don't see that a whole lot. And we really need him to do that a lot this year for the Sharks to fit those projections that we were talking about earlier. Ben, who are your 3 stars?
So I think how I'll order this is kind of how they've done in the preseason overall, who's kind of been the stars of the preseason, since we won't have another podcast before the regular season begins. So I think I would order them Meyer as a 3rd star.
God, you just love that guy.
3rd star.
Timo Meyer. If you have a secret admirer on Valentine's Day, I'm just going to let you know right now it's Ben.
He's not my first star. Anyway, second star will be Kevin LeBanc, and the first star will be Michael Bodker, because he's given us hope that he will then steal away with his inconsistent play and lack of buy-in to the system that we saw last year as well.
Oh, well, one of those goals was the power play goal too. Also very important.
Well, which is good, because you know we do need the power play to wake up.
Now, gents, it's time to say goodbye. Really? Bye. Really? Just another long pause.
Just doesn't want to,
I like how Ben and I both knew it was a moment.
I knew you were going to do it too. Wasn't that smart?
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.